Now, research credit for the following article again goes to Ted Rubenstein. Ted got this from The Economist, a British, economic, obviously financial publication. And this is from The Economist issue of August 28th to September 3rd of 1982.
And before we start the article, I should mention that broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
Now, again, from The Economist of August 28th to September 3rd, 1982, Ted Rubenstein researched this, and I'm just going to read you the last little piece of this article. The key names here, Roberto Rossone, R-O-S-O-N-E, Abruciati, A-B-B-R-U-C-C-I-A-T-T-I, and Balducci, B-A-L-D-U-C-C-I. The relationship between those is as follows. By the way, Flavio Carboni is another Calvi associate and another participant in the whole Vatican Incorporated scandals. Another twist in the intrigue has surfaced in Milan, where an assistant prosecutor, Mr. Alfonso Mara, has uncovered allegations that $150,000 of the money which Mr. Calvi transferred was intended to pay off a mafia hitman, Mr. Danilo Abruciati. The hitman bungled an attempt to assassinate Banco Ambrosiano's vice chairman, Mr. Roberto Rossone, last April. Mr. Abruciati, like Mr. Balducci, met a violent death shortly thereafter, and Roberto Rossone was shot and wounded while emerging from Banco Ambrosiano's Milan headquarters, where he lived. He had, he may have had offices. I'm not sure if he lived there. He had offices there. At any rate, as he was walking out of that building, a hitman, Danilo Abruciati, tried to kill him, was in turn killed by Rossone's bodyguard, and one of the people involved in helping to recruit Abruciati, Domenico Balducci, died violently shortly thereafter. Abruciati, Balducci, and the attempted hit on Roberto Rossone outside of this same very faded building, I guess one could say, is something to remember. We're coming back to it later in the program.
Yes, if you go to Milan, it's a spot to avoid. Okay, now we're going to start to expand our geographical whirligig here that we talked about at the beginning of the broadcast. You think before we do, we should take a break, or do you think we should wait until afterwards?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm feeling fairly peppy, and I know I'm going to feel pretty exhausted later on. Why don't we keep going and striking him while the iron's hot?
All right, we're going to talk now we talked earlier about the tentacles, to use that dramatic word, of P2. But what else can you say? They extend all over the world, and we talked mostly last week about South and Central America, and North America, and Europe. And specifically Italy, of course, to a great extent. This week, we're going to be talking about Africa, the Middle East, Australia, etc., etc. And right now, we're going to start our expansion into the Middle East. We're going to read a short segment here from a book called In Banks We Trust. The author is Penny Lernoux, L-E-R-N-O-U-X. The book is published by Anchor Press Doubleday, copyright 1984. Penny Lernoux is talking, of course, about Licio Gelli, the former Grand Master of the P2, quite possibly the most powerful fascist in Italy, certainly one of the most powerful fascists in the world at the height of his power. He is currently somewhat on the run, although probably not really suffering too much. Licio Gelli, as we mentioned, besides heading up the P2, was intimately involved in everything that the right wing was doing in Italy and many places all over the rest of the world, a man of massive influence, an intimate of Sindona's, an intimate of Italian and South American military and government officials, basically a mover and shaker of mammoth proportions. Lernoux, writing about Licio Gelli. Gelli was careful to cover his military flank. They're talking about his involvement with Argentina. And when Isabel Perón was overthrown in 1976, his connections served him well. His principal patron in the new Argentinian junta was Admiral Massera, head of the Navy. But other military officials also belonged to the P2, including a retired admiral who was on the board of Banco Ambrosiano's Argentine branch and an army commander who became president of the state-run oil company. It was an indication of Gelli's continuing good relations with the military that he remained in his post at the Argentine embassy in Rome until 1981, when the P2 scandal forced him to flee to Uruguay. Should just mention parenthetically that the last report we had, he was being sheltered in Uruguay by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon's forces there. Gelli was doubly useful to Admiral Massera, Lernoux continues. He arranged arms sales and harassed the Argentine exile community in Europe. At that time, the Italian military attaché in Buenos Aires was a member of the P2, and through such connections, Massera arranged the purchase of Italian frigates. It was also said that Gelli's contacts with Muammar el-Qaddafi enabled him to arrange arms shipments to Argentina through Libya. Apparently, the quid pro quo was to have been Argentine nuclear technology to help Libya develop nuclear weapons. Argentina has the most advanced nuclear technology in Latin America and is capable of making a nuclear bomb. The Argentine Navy controls the Atomic Energy Commission in charge of nuclear policy. Whether jelly had a part in obtaining Libyan arms supplies for Argentina during the 1982 conflict with Britain over the Falkland Islands is unknown, but the Argentine military regime did confirm the receipt of such arms. Okay, now a couple of key points here that will be coming up later. Obviously, one of the main ones is the contact with Muammar al-Qaddafi, who not only is a major player in the world of terrorism, he is a major player in the world of right-wing terrorism, which is what we're talking about, and also in the world of Middle Eastern arms shipments, which is going to become a major focus of the broadcast tonight. Secondarily, you might notice, again, these connections, many of them beginning through P2 connections to Argentina and the Falkland War, because not only is that going to be mentioned at some length tonight, but it's quite possible that we will be speculating about it next week when we are talking about American connections to the Mediterranean merry-go-round.
And we'll be touching back on the possibility of arms for the Argentine war in the Falklands coming from P2 later in the program. Now, we've talked, of course, Muammar Gaddafi is a key figure on the international scene today, and we're going to go into the connections between Gaddafi and this whole P2 nexus that we've been talking about. Reviewing a short section that we talked about last week, this is from St. Peter's Banker by Luigi D'Afonso, published in hardcover, by Franklin Watts and copyrighted 1983. Now, in this little section that I'm going to reread here, we're going to be talking about a guy named Guido Gianottini, and who he is, and what he was involved in. Well, reviewing very briefly, Gianottini, the bombing here, or the bombings, refer to some of the bombings in the aforementioned strategy of tension, specifically the Piazza Fontana bombing in 1969, and a couple of others as well. About Guido Gianottini, his connections to P2 and those bombings, D'Afonso writes as follows. Police traced the bombings to three neo-fascists, among them General Guido Gianottini, an agent of the SID, Italy's Secret Service, and a high-ranking member of Licio Gelli's P2. It is believed that Gianottini was head of a faction within P2 known as the Third Position. That's also known as Terza Posizione, by the way. Remember that, because we're going to talk about it in a minute. This faction, says journalist Thomas Sheehan, advocates what is called Nazi Maoism. Sheehan goes on to say that the Third Position aligns itself with the political beliefs of Hitler, Perón, Mao, and Gaddafi. Its slogans include, Long live the fascist dictatorship of the proletariat, and Hitler and Mao united in struggle. Well, Guido Gianottini, in addition to being the head of the SID and a key member of the P2, also was, in addition to his involvement in the strategy of tension, was also a key operative, apparently, of the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the Galen organization that we spoke about in connection with the sniffer plane scandal. Now, Gianottini specifically was being used to ship arms to Italian fascists by the BND, and the key name here, the key company used to ship those arms is called Merex, M-E-R-E-X. Merex is very closely affiliated with, among others, Otto Skorzeny. Otto Skorzeny, the key Nazi commando and CIA agent and Galen agent later. Skorzeny is a name that we're going to be touching on in just a second. We've looked at Skorzeny in connection with not only the 1972 Borghese coup attempt, but also the Rose de Vente coup group. Skorzeny's arms empire was aiding both of those fascist attempted fascist coups in Italy. Now, the Skorzeny, a guy, protege of his, basically, a fellow who was under his command during the war, a man named Mertens, Gerhard Mertens, was the head of Merex. Merex, apparently, a BND conduit for channeling arms to Italian fascists. The key person connected with BND and Merex, Guido Gianottini, and he's head of the Terza Posizione, which, among others, owes ideological allegiance to Muammar Gaddafi. And remember, again, the Skorzeny connection to Merex and its connections to Guido Gianottini. Recall also that Klaus Barbie and Friedrich Schwend, the mastermind of Operation Bernhard, also had dealings with Merex, as we looked at in our last broadcast.
Okay, now we're going to look at a translation from the Italian magazine Epoca from November 2nd of 1974. This is a Jonathan Marshall translation, and as we mentioned before, Jonathan Marshall, the editorial page editor of the Oakland Tribune, formerly of the San Jose Mercury.
This article was researched by Ted Rubenstein.
Now, they're talking about a group called OLP, but again, what we're talking about are Nazi Maoists. We're talking about a group ideologically, if not completely, affiliated with Terza Posizione. And believe me, folks, anybody who is espousing Hitler, Mao, and Gaddafi, there can't be a whole lot of running around. It's probably more than merely an ideological connection. But at this point, I think that the names involved are primarily separate at this point. Anyway, from Epoca magazine, November 2nd, 1974, the headline is OLP, the, quote, Arabs in black shirts. They're called Nazi Maoists. They're close to Freda. That's Franco Freda. Today they support Libya, from which they receive money. They are the men of Lotta di Popolo, perhaps the most dangerous of the extreme neo-fascist groups. Their organization is still little known and difficult to catch. Organizzazione Lotta di Popolo, which had other names in the past, is now known as OLP, like the Palestinian group. They get a monthly subvention, a check, basically, is what they're saying, from the Libyan embassy in Rome. Their ties to Gaddafi, who has never concealed his support for the European right, chief among them the Greeks, are close. There was a meeting at the Hotel Hilton in Rome on March 9th between the Libyan Prime Minister Jalloud and several leaders of the OLP, and I would just cut in right now to say that Jalloud is still basically the second most powerful man in Libya to this day. The fascist group was represented by Serafino Di Luia and Ugo Gaudenzi. They proposed to Jalloud a plan of pro-Arab activity covered by the publication of a periodical. The principal aim of the initiative, to which the minister gave his approval, was to cut off the hand of the, quote, Marxists in the Palestinian movement. The Libyans assured their financial assistance. Okay, skipping down. It appears that the activists of OLP, after a militant period in the MSI, that's the Movimento Sociale Italiano, that's the Italian neo-fascist political party that's actually a part of the political process.
Referred to in the Sniffer Planes article in connection with Carlo Pacenti.
And headed up by Mussolini's son, incidentally. It appears that the activists of OLP, after a militant period in the MSI, formed around Randolfo Pacciardi, then were drawn away in 1968 and 69, along with the Movimento Studentesco di Giurisprudenza. That group, in which key roles were played by Serafino Di Luia, Enzo Maria Dantini, Fabio De Felice, and others, and which found itself always beside the most extreme Roman neo-fascists, from Mario Merlini to Stefano Della Chiai, again a name that our listeners are familiar with, in all violent actions at the University of Rome, was spotted by the police for the, quote, strange suicide of Antonio Aliotti, a youth found dead in his auto carrying explosives in February 1967. Before his death, Aliotti had sought to get in contact with the Della Chiai group. After the Plaza Fontana massacre, and by the way, the Plaza Fontana massacre was a part of the strategy of tension that we mentioned earlier, the Luia and Dentini group began calling itself Lotta di Popolo. Other heads included Ugo Gaudenzi, the brothers Casella, and Lamberto Roche, but Dentini was undoubtedly the premier figure. He was a mining engineer graduate, intelligent and dangerous. Roche went on frequent voyages in 1969 to the Mideast, and in this period, the organization probably forged its Arab ties. It was in the same year that Franco Freda, in Padua, organized a conference for Al-Fatah, in which a member of the Palestinian PLO was consigned a big load of bomb timers. The PLO began stepping up its propaganda in neo-fascist circles. A congress held in Barcelona on April 4, 1969, organized by the German New Order, was concerned exclusively with the, quote, Palestinian question. Some Algerians, in the name of Al-Fatah, made two requests. One, non-Arabs should support the organization of sabotage and supply money, arms, mercenaries, and training. Two, help with propaganda in Europe and Latin America. Al-Fatah got the support of ex-Nazis like the Belgian Karl von der Put, who fought in Africa in World War II. In Rome, an ex-Nazi official sold arms to the Palestinians and recruited Nazis as instructors in the training camps at El Asifa. On December 23, 1970, the fascist journal of Monaco, National Zeitung, published an ad. Quote, "We are looking for courageous comrades available immediately for a trip to the Mideast to study the methods of Palestinian liberation war," unquote. The journal was directed by Gerhard Frey, a friend of Nasser, that's Gamal Abdel Nasser, the that time the head of Egypt, and Nazi officials. Oh, a friend of Nasser and a Nazi official. the OLP and Freda groups set up by the Italy-Libya organization, founded in Ferrara in 1973 by MSI member Aldo Gaiba and presided over by Claudio Muti, professor of Romanian at the University of Bologna, arrested and then released in the course of the investigation into the Italicus massacre. Okay, the Italicus massacre was another strategy of tension massacre. In a recent article in Nouvelle Observateur, titled L'Orchestre Noir, which means the Black Orchestra, it was said that a frequenter of OLP in Rome was the Al-Fatah and PLO representative Niels Zweiter, assassinated 16th of October 1972, quote, without doubt by Israeli agents, unquote. According to the article, the group OLP today has ties above all in with, Avanguardia Nazionale, with the ex-members of Ordine Nuovo in the Fascist Congress in Monaco. The three groups together signed several flyers. The newspaper Anno Zero, born after the end of the publication of Ordine Nuovo, was printed the same place as the publication of Lotta di Popolo. But Avanguardia Nazionale, and above all its fugitive head, Stefano Della Chiaia, take us back to the series of coups initiated in 1970. Della Chiaia is today thought by investigators to be the heir of Valerio Borghese. One of the coup plans recently discovered foresaw collaboration between Avanguardia Nazionale and the OLP for subversion in the center south. The north was confided to Fronte Nazionale. Now, a bunch of things in the last paragraph that need to be talked about. Okay, Stefano Della Chiaia, for those of you who don't remember or who have just tuned in, Stefano Della Chiaia is probably the premier fascist terrorist in the world today. Stefano Della Chiaia has been working directly with the P2 for years and years, was responsible for the Bologna railway station bombing, was involved in, undoubtedly, in the Plaza Fontana massacre, the Italicus massacre, which is another railway bombing. Also was involved with Klaus Barbie, former Gestapo chief of Lyon and ex-CIA, or CIA agent anyway, in the Bolivian cocaine traffic, and worked there with Klaus Barbie's SS men. Stefano Della Chiaia himself, of course, through Avanguardia Nazionale, is here connected to this pro-Libyan Italian fascist group. Now, we have mentioned before, and we'll mention again in this broadcast, about Muammar Gaddafi's other ties into the fascist right wing. But here is a specific tie between this group, Lotta di Popolo, otherwise known as OLP, between this group, the Avanguardia Nazionale, and Stefano Della Chiaia, who again is practically Licio Gelli's right-hand man in terms of terrorism, and Muammar el-Qaddafi. This is very important for a variety of reasons, not least of which is that when Mehmet Ali Agha, the would-be assassin of the Pope, was being trained, he was being trained in shooting by Frank Turpel, who at the time was working almost undoubtedly for the CIA with Muammar el-Qaddafi. So these things are all going to come back later on.
Now recall that one of the things we looked at in Radio Free America number 3 was the fact that Muammar Gaddafi's Secret Service was put together by a contingent of Nazi war criminals recruited not only by Otto Skorzeny, but through the Galen Organization. And this is worth noting again, because we're going to take a look at Gaddafi and Skorzeny here in just a second. Recall the segment of that last article that Nip read you from L'Epoca, where it talks about how Gaddafi had always supported the European right and European fascism, and the ones in Greece in particular. Again, Gaddafi is thought of usually as a leftist, quote-unquote. One of the things that we've looked at great length in our Radio Free America number 4 and in our regular series of broadcasts concerns Muammar Gaddafi's, not only his connections to the right, including the CIA, but also the fact that his bombings, in essence, benefit the right by driving everybody in a rightward direction. Think about that and examine that in connection with the strategy of tension, which was hatched by Stefano Della Chiaia, although it was not a new idea, and ask yourselves to what extent Muammar Gaddafi may represent, with his Turpel, Wilson, CIA, and Galen connections, may represent an international application of the same principle. Specifically about Muammar Gaddafi and some of the fascist elements, in particularly those connected to P2, we're going to review a section of that we've gone over in many broadcasts. This section comes from the book The Great Heroin Coup, subtitled Drugs, Intelligence, and International Fascism. That book was published in softcover by the Southend Press of Boston, copyright 1980, and it was authored by freelance Danish journalist Henrik Kruger. And in The Great Heroin Coup, there's a discussion of an international fascist organization which could be compared both with the P2 Lodge, which is obviously an international fascist organization, and obviously from the context that we're going to look at, intersects very closely with Internacional Fascista. Also, consider that in connection with the World Anti-Communist League, with which it also intersects, and which also essentially is an international fascist combine. Now, the key name that we're going to be looking at here in the Internacional Fascista is the so-called, well, not so-called, but the Paladin Mercenary Group. That is a mercenary group put together, among others, by Otto Skorzeny and financed by his weapons empire. It's worth noting for our purposes, recalling our discussion of P2 assistance and Vatican assistance to elements in South Africa, that the Paladin Group operated primarily in southern Africa. Of the Paladin Group, its participation in Internacional Fascista and the joining together of Skorzeny and Gaddafi, or the rejoining together of Skorzeny and Gaddafi, Kruger writes as follows. By the way, CORU here is an anti-Castro Cuban group put together by the Central Intelligence Agency here. The common denominator in CORU, as well as Internacional Fascista, a combine of anti-communist extremist organizations chartered at an October 1976 meeting in Rome, attended by CORU representatives, appears to have been the CIA, or at least a faction thereof. CORU's headquarters are in Miami. Originally, it was sustained by tight collaboration with the CIA and the Chilean junta's secret police. According to the Cuban former CIA agent Manuel Darmas, the CIA coordinated Dina's acts with CORU's and supplied the latter with funds, advisors, and explosives. The head of Dina's Miami-based force was reportedly Eduardo Sepulveda, the Chilean attaché in Miami and a top dog in Dina. Internacional Fascista is the outgrowth of many years of planning in Madrid by the late Nazi Otto Skorzeny, who in the 50s had worked for the CIA. On its rolls are former SS agents, OAS terrorists, hatchetmen for Portugal's dreaded secret police, the PIDE, terrorists from Spain's Fuerza Nueva, Argentine and Italian fascists, Cuban exiles, French gangsters from SAC, and former CIA agents hardened by terror campaigns in Operation 40, Guatemala, Brazil, and Argentina. Besides CORU, Internacional Fascista's militants have at various times numbered the Army for the Liberation of Portugal and its Agente Presse contingent under Yves Guérin Sarac, the Italian Ordine Nuovo, led by Salvatore Francia and Pierluigi Conchitelli we're going to come back to, Spain's Guerrillas of Christ the King, the Asociación Anticomunista Iberica and Alianza Anticomunista Apostolica, the AAA, which is not to be confused with the Argentine AAA, that is also represented in Internacional Fascista and the Paladin Group. SS Colonel Skorzeny was the kingpin of the Paladin Mercenary Group until his death in 1975. Dr. Gerhard Hartmut von Schubert, formerly of Joseph Goebbels' propaganda ministry, was its operating manager. Headquartered in Albufeira, Spain, its actual nerve centers were Skorzeny's export-import offices and cover firm MC, located at a Madrid address shared with a front for the Spanish intelligence agency SCOE under Colonel Eduardo Blanco, and also an office of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. The cozy relationship of Spanish right-wing terrorists with U.S. and Spanish intelligence is further underlined by the SCOE's purchase in the mid-1970s of Mitchell Werbel's silenced M10 machine pistols, prior to which the ideal terrorist weapon had been unavailable in Europe. Shortly thereafter, the M10 turned up in the hands of Spanish and Italian terrorists. A melange of former OAS and SAC figures and West German rightist activists and mercenaries, Paladin joined terrorist actions in Europe, Africa, Latin America, and even Southeast Asia. Along with Italian fascists, Paladin is responsible for the 17th of December 1973 bombing of Rome's Fiumicino airport, which claimed 32 lives. On behalf of the Spanish government, Paladin kidnapped and murdered leaders of the Basque ETA, and in 1974-6 engineered some 50 bombings in Basque country. Paladin's bankrollers included Skorzeny's weapons empire and Libyan head of state Muammar Gaddafi. The Skorzeny-controlled World Armco, with main offices in Paris, was registered in the name of Paladin manager von Schubert. Upon the death of Skorzeny in 1975, von Schubert moved to Argentina, but returned 6 months later to reorganize. Internacional Fascista was a crucial first step toward fulfilling the dream not only of Skorzeny, but also of his close friend in Madrid exile, José López Rega, Juan Perón's gray eminence, and Prince Justo Valerio Borghese, the Italian fascist money man who had been rescued from execution at the hands of the World War II Italian resistance by future CIA counterintelligence whiz James J. Angleton. They and other Nazi and fascist powers throughout Europe and Latin America envisioned a new world order built on a fascist iron circle linking Buenos Aires, Santiago, Lima, La Paz, Brasilia, and Montevideo. So they're a couple of key points to be made here. First of all, again, recall that Otto Skorzeny, while working on behalf of Galen and CIA, helps put together Muammar Gaddafi's Secret Service. We looked at that in Radio Free America number 3. Now, recall also that that Skorzeny was involved with channeling arms to the 1972 Borghese coup attempt and also the Rosa Deventi group, both of which involved, among others, Michele Sindona. Those are a couple of the name things to remember. Now, Pierluigi Concutelli is the person that we looked at in the last broadcast. Judge Vittorio Accorsio, who was investigating the P2, was machine gunned by Pierluigi Concutelli, acting at the behest of Stefano Della Chiai. The machine pistol he used was one of Mitch Werbel's machine pistols, which had turned up coming from the Spanish intelligence service. We looked at that last week. Now, a couple of the key people that are collaborating with Skorzeny in the Internacional Fascista are José López Rega, a key member of the Argentine P2, as we reviewed just a couple of minutes ago, and also Prince Justo Valerio Borghese, a prominent Italian fascist, a diehard Mussolini supporter who then went to work for the Nazis after Mussolini's capitulation. And as we looked at, Borghese is a key man manipulating various things with the P2 lodge. Borghese was the main organizer of the 1970 coup attempt, funded not only by P2 but also by the CIA through Michele Sindona. So Pierluigi Concutelli, José López Rega, Justo Valerio Borghese, Otto Skorzeny, and of course, Muammar Gaddafi, all of these people, the supposed leftist, Muammar Gaddafi, all of these people involved with the Internacional Fascista, which again, one could consider in connection with P2 and the World Anti-Communist League.
Okay, now we also mentioned earlier in the broadcast that one of the things that was going on was the Vatican Bank apparently helping to back money loans to dummy companies in Central and South America, which were then going to fund fascist governments in their efforts to do various things. And we're going to get an idea now of some of the types of things that these various governments, through organizations like the Internacional Fascista and through their already in place P2 connections, what they used these monies for, what they probably used these monies for. I'm going to read another section from Henrik Krueger's The Great Heroin Coup. What has made sleuth work difficult is Internacional Fascista's attempts to camouflage itself as an arm of the left. When General Joaquin Centeno Anayo, Bolivia's ambassador to France, was shot down in Paris in May 1976, a caller to the police claimed the Che Guevara Brigade had murdered him to avenge the 1967 capture of Guevara in Bolivia. An eyewitness, moreover, claimed to have recognized the assailant as the infamous left-wing terrorist Carlos. However, 1 month later, the Nouvel Observateur reported that the assassination had been planned at Madrid's Consulade Hotel by Bolivian intelligence agent Saavedra and three terrorists from the Paladin Group. Again, the Paladin Group, just inserting here, the Paladin Group is that group of which Otto Skorzeny and Muammar al-Qaddafi, both members. Furthermore, inspection of Centeno Anaya's politics revealed his opposition to Bolivian President Banzer and allegiance to ex-President Torres, whose murder in Argentina followed shortly after Centeno's. I should just mention real quickly that President Banzer of Bolivia was a right-wing president with the support of the United States, an anti-communist right-winger, and ex-President Torres was a civil libertarian whose murder followed the ambassadors. Then it was the turn of former Chilean former minister Orlando Letelier to be murdered by Chilean and Cuban terrorists in Washington, soon after which the establishment U.S. press, citing CIA and FBI sources, pointed the finger at the Chilean left. And one brief mention should be made here. At the time of the Orlando Letelier murder and the CIA misinformation campaign or disinformation campaign involved in this case, Ed Wilson, who, of course, ties directly to Muammar Gaddafi, but also the person who was the head of the CIA at the time of this disinformation campaign was George Bush. And one of the leading lights in this disinformation campaign, besides William Buckley, a former CIA agent himself, were people like Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen, both of whom we've talked about in terms of the Bulgarian theory. And they were also the people who were pushing hard on this so-called leftist killed Orlando Letelier theory, which of course turned out to be utter garbage. In connection with these assassinations, Krueger writes, it's appropriate here to quote in its entirety a recent report entitled, quote, Latin America Murder, Inc. The report goes as follows. A still classified staff report on questionable foreign intelligence operations, unquote, in the United States, prepared for the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on International Operations, shed some new light on cooperation in security matters between Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Paraguay, and Uruguay. According to the Senate report, which has been leaked to the press in the United States, the joint operation is known as Condor. The Senate report mentioned a, quote, phase three of Operation Condor, which involved the formation of special teams to carry out, quote, sanctions, including the assassination of the enemies of its constituent governments. The best-known killing of this type was the bomb attack on Orlando Letelier in September 1976 in Washington. Condor's role in this emerged during the testimony of the FBI agent Bob Shearer, who investigated the case and gave evidence at the trial of Michael Townley. He testified to the use of Condor as the channel by which the Chilean DINA chief, that's the Chilean secret police, General Manuel Contreras, tried to get U.S. visas for two of the agents involved. An impressive list of murders may now be laid at the door of Operation Condor. These include the killings of General Carlos Prats of Chile and Juan José Torres of Bolivia in Argentina, the Uruguayan politicians Hector Gutiérrez Ruiz and Zelmar Michelini, also in Argentina, Bolivia's General Joaquin Centeno Anaya and Uruguay's Colonel Ramón Trabal in Paris, and the attempted assassination of the Chilean Senator Bernardo Leighton. The Senate report disclosed that Condor had considered establishing its own operational base in Miami in 1974, but that this was headed off by a CIA protest, quote, through regular intelligence channels, unquote. In this case, the CIA informed the Chilean DINA of United States displeasure and no Miami station was opened. According to the Senate report, the FBI concluded early in its investigation of the Letelier assassination that the murder might have been carried out as a third phase of Operation Condor. Presumably, third phase will now go into the lexicon of euphemisms alongside the CIA's, quote, to terminate with extreme prejudice, unquote. The fact that the operation was well known to the United States at least 5 years ago makes nonsense of its shock surprise at the time of Letelier's death. I should mention that not only does it make nonsense of shock surprise, but it puts, again, it casts a sharper light on the activities of then-CIA Director George Bush in his attempt to promulgate the theory that that Castroite leftists shot Letelier to make him into a martyr. And it casts a sharp light onto Claire Sterling, Michael Ledeen et al. in their stern labors to use their journalistic quote-unquote credentials to push the same story, to try and pin the blame for the Letelier murder on Castro, when it was perfectly obvious to everybody that at the very least it was the Chilean secret police involved, and quite possibly with some kind of American intelligence involvement as well. This is a very interesting parallel, again, because of what we're going to see directly with the assassination attempt on the Pope, when these same forces swing into gear, and strangely enough, when the story is revealed later on as being manufactured, the journalistic versions of them seem to be strangely in keeping with the manufactured portions of the story itself in ways that would not have been turned up by mere journalism, but suggest that the journalists themselves were in on the manufacture, or at least apprised of the manufacture very early on. And this was also the case very strongly in the Letelier case, where Buckley's and other people's attempt to pin the thing on the Cuban left used a lot of information that had not been released to the general public, and in fact deliberately twisted some of that information in a way that suggested that they knew what the real truth was and were trying to get around it.
Now, one of the key points to remember here is the Internationale Fascista representing itself as an arm of the left. It's worth noting that in the assassination of Centeno Anaya, the Bolivian ambassador to France, one eyewitness claimed to have recognized, claimed to have recognized Carlos the Jackal of all people. Now, in Radio Free America number 4, we looked at information indicating, and this came from Frank Turpel himself, that he trained Carlos the Jackal. And of course, we've looked at the possibility that Carlos the Jackal is a Western agent provocateur. He was assisted by, among others, the Central Intelligence Agency to escape an assassination plot against him. Again, that goes back to Radio Free America number 4. But take note here, for our purposes here, of Muammar Gaddafi and his presence in the Internationale Fascista, and specifically the Paladin Mercenary Group. This obviously is a fascist, far right-wing organization, and this is not at all out of character for Muammar Gaddafi. His secret service, trained by the Galen Group, headed by the same Otto Skorzeny who participates with him in the Paladin Group. His terrorists are quite obviously supplied by the Turple Wilson branch of the CIA, at least their training and weapons. And we've taken a look in the article L'Epoca, in the publication L'Epoca, about how Muammar Gaddafi was very much involved with the Italian right wing. And in fact, a section of the fascist P2 lodge, the Terza Posizione, hails Gaddafi as it's one of its ideological mentors. So Gaddafi and the Internazionale Fascista are very important here. Also, remember Operation Condor. We're going to be coming to that again later in the broadcast.
Indeed. And we're going to be back in just a few minutes after break, and we're going to begin to seriously spread this this taint into the Middle East and begin to look into the actual machinations of the Guns for Drugs for Terrorism Network in earnest. And that's when we come back with Dave Emery, myself, Nip Tuck, and more of Radio Free America in just a few minutes here. Gyration of the Mediterranean merry-go-round. And as you recall, just at the end of the last segment, just before we broke, we were talking specifically about the vast network of contacts, and Dave mentioned three roughly parallel groups, but with a great deal of intersection between them. One is the Internazionale Fascista, of which Muammar al-Qaddafi and Otto Skorzeny are both members of one group of that organization, the Paladin Group. And the Paladin Group has worked in conjunction with a lot of Italian fascist groups. They're also running parallel, of course, the P2, which we've been talking about at great length. But bear in mind, when we say parallel here, we mean usually parallel in aims, goals, and methods, but oftentimes intersecting directly in membership. And the third group, the World Anti-Communist League, which we did a fairly exhaustive two-part Radio Free America about. And again, a group of essentially a fascist organization. And all these groups are largely, they manipulate themselves and are manipulated by, in turn, the quote-unquote legitimate intelligence services. And in many cases, it's very hard to tell where the intelligence services leave off and these overt fascist machines begin. Certainly in Italy during the time of the P2, there was no distinction between the two, and certainly at times in the United States, there has been no distinction, especially in terms of foreign policy, and it's the Western intelligence foreign policy in which, especially American intelligence's foreign policy, in which they make the most use of these various groups like the P2, which we mentioned as being a funding conduit through Michele Sindona for the 1970 coup attempt, the Borghese coup, in which the fascists attempt to take over Italy. And the United States directly helped to support that coup attempt, which did not come off. And it's also these types of groups like the Paladin Mercenary Group, Internazionale Fascista in general, and the World Anti-Communist League that helped to prosecute U.S. Global goals all over the world without directly involving the intelligence networks in a way that they would have to deny later on.
Now, some of the key names to remember. Otto Skorzeny, key Galen agent, key Nazi, a man who is closely affiliated with an arms firm called Merex, among others. Skorzeny very much involved with the arms traffic. Merex used as a front by the Galen organization to channel arms to Italian fascists. The key name there, Guido Gianettini, who was not only involved with Stefano Della Chiaia's strategy of tension, but who also was heading up a P2 group known as the Terza Posizione, owing ideological allegiance to, among others, Muammar Gaddafi. The same Gaddafi whose secret service was put together by Skorzeny, acting at behest of Galen, who in turn was acting at the behest of the CIA. They then are associated, that is, Gaddafi and Skorzeny, through the Paladin Mercenary Group. And it should also be noted that Otto Skorzeny channels arms to the 1970 coup attempt, the aforementioned coup attempt that Nip referred to, as well as the Rose de Vente group, both centered around P2 and Vito Micheli, also Michele Sindona. We looked at that last time. Recall also that Skorzeny's Merex firm was affiliated also with, among others, Klaus Barbie and Friedrich Schwend. We looked at that last time. Now, we looked at the Internazionale Fascista, a right-wing combine involving, among others, Muammar Gaddafi, also Pierluigi Conchicelli, Della Chiaia's right-hand man and the killer of Judge Accorsio, also José López Rega and Giusto Valerio Borghese, two of the key fascists affiliated with the P2 nexus that were also very much affiliated with Internazionale Fascista. And keep those names in mind, because we're going to be coming right back to the, some of the right-wing connections to the Middle East here. We're going to be moving away now from Muammar Gaddafi for the time being, and we're going to be taking a look in particular at some connections between Italian fascists and the Falange in Lebanon. Now, specifically, the Falange is headed up by the Jamal family, and Pierre Jamal, drew his inspiration from Adolf Hitler. He went to the 1936 Olympics, thought Hitler and Nazi Germany looked great, and that was enough for him. He basically then established the Falange Party on the basis of the European fascist parties. And the Falange, of course, is a Christian group very much involved in the fighting in Lebanon today. And the Jamal brothers, first Amin and then Bashir Jamal, became presidents of Lebanon, respectively. One was assassinated and then his brother took over. Now, we're going to take a look at the connections between, among others, Terza Posizione and Italian fascists, and the some of the Falange in Lebanon, and some of the connections in turn between those groups, those elements, and the Bologna bombing in 1980 that we referred to with Stefano Della Chiai, Pierluigi Pagliai, Licio Gelli, and so forth. Again, another one of these P2-related provocations. Reading now, or returning, I really should say, to a publication called Middle East Magazine. This was researched for us by Ted Rubenstein, and this is from Middle East issue of July of 1981. In an article called Europe's Secrets, Italy's Secret Service Wars, written by the Rome correspondent of Middle East, Paolo Caligaris. We referred to this last, we read parts of this article in last week's show. We're going to be reading some more of it later, and we'll be turning back again to it next week as well. Again, from Middle East, July of 1981, Italy's Secret Service Wars by Paolo Caligaris. Soon after last August's Bologna bombing, which led to the arrest of several neo-fascists, the PLO informed the Italian authorities of a Lebanese connection with the tragedy. Palestinian security had arrested four West Germans who admitted having been trained in Falangist camps in Lebanon. They belonged to the Karl-Heinz Hoffmann Group, which was later linked to last year's Oktoberfest bombing in Munich. I would interrupt, incidentally, that that group is also affiliated with Gerhard Frey, one of the people affiliated with the OLP and the Gaddafi-related fascists in the article that Nip read you in the first hour. Continuing, the West Germans told Palestinian investigators that they had overheard discussions by a number of Italians on plans for a big bang, unquote, to be carried out in communist-run Bologna. Fatah second-in-command Saleh Khalaf, K-H-A-L-A-F, said that the Italian authorities had been informed by the PLO that they had ignored the but they had ignored the information. When this became known, the Bologna judges investigated the background of the neo-fascists arrested and confirmed that, along with rightists from Belgium, Spain, and France, many had been through Falangist training camps. Moreover, several neo-fascists charged in subsequent months with various crimes escaped to Maronite Lebanon through Milan, Athens, and Nicosia. Last September, two pro-Palestinian Italian journalists, Italo Toni and Graziella Di Paolo, disappeared from a Beirut hotel. Traces seem to lead to the Maronite capital, Junie, J-O-U-N-I-E-H. Inquiries conducted by General Giovannoni, Italy's Secret Services chief for the Middle East, based in Beirut, led nowhere. After initial reassuring news that negotiations with the kidnappers were taking place, unquote, he left Beirut and colleagues now describe him as being terrified for his life, unquote. Remember, this is the Italian head of intelligence for the Middle East they're talking about here. There are, for the time being, only rumors concerning Giovannoni's findings, but relatives and friends of both journalists know that they were working on the Falangist-fascist connection and possibly on the cover this is given by people in Rome's political headquarters. So this possible Falangist and Italian fascist collaboration we're going to be looking at in greater detail. And also keep in mind the Maronite Christians. We're going to take a look at an interesting name in just a little bit with that.
All right, and now we're going to read a segment of an article entitled The Business of Terrorism, first appeared in Parapolitics, March 31st, 1982.
We should perhaps explain what Parapolitics is. You refer to the journal. We used it actually last time. Parapolitics is a pun. I guess it's now defunct. It's not currently in publication. But it's put out by Jonathan Marshall and also Ted Rubenstein. Jonathan is the editorial page editor of the Tribune. Ted, an associate of ours for a long time. Parapolitics is a journal, an investigative journal, distributed to political researchers and investigative reporters. So if you haven't heard of it before, that's why.
All right, reading from Jonathan Marshall's essay, The Business of Terrorism. Italian magistrates investigating the bloody bombing of the Bologna railway station in 1980 discovered that several suspected neo-fascists had passed through Falangist training camps in the company of rightists from Belgium, France, and Spain. Alessandro Alibrandi, leader of the neo-fascist Italian terrorist group Terza Posizione, used to live in East Beirut under Falange's protection until he was assassinated during a secret trip to Rome this December.